What if the most dangerous games aren't played in boardrooms or back alleys, but in the heart of a glamorous marriage? Imagine a young wife entering into an open arrangement with her billionaire husband, only to secretly film his every affair and sell the footage on the dark web. For years, she's been the unseen puppeteer, until one lover uncovers the secret, flipping the game and turning voyeur into hunted. What follows is a relentless, high-stakes battle of surveillance, seduction, and shifting allegiances, where no one knows who's in control or who's about to lose everything. So, if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. Setup. The penthouse stretched 48 stories above a restless Manhattan, each window pane reflecting the city's hard lights and Lana Carter's careful ambitions. At 28, Lana had learned to let opulence rest easily on her shoulders. But seated across the glass dining table from Edward Carter, her billionaire husband with the silver temples and the razor-sharp insight, she understood that comfort was just the first act in a script she had yet to write. Today, they sat with the marriage counselor, a woman famous for her discretion. The document lay between them, the agreement. 4 pages, densely worded, all about freedom. At least, that was the pitch. The real offer was subtler. Open, honest, and pleasurable for both, Edward intoned smoothly, one manicured hand cradling a glass of Sancerre, the other resting on Lana's thigh. Lana smiled. She had agreed, of course. What was a trophy wife if not adaptable? Besides, Edward's terms disguised something far more valuable than fidelity. To him, the arrangement meant efficiency, pleasure as asset, legacy as bottom line, image as currency. For Lana, it promised both mask and shield, a way to curate power from margins others never saw. The city's heartbeat pressed in, a surge of horns, the whip-crack laugh of a siren far below. The penthouse was all glass, chrome, and curated art, each corner designed to reflect light but hide truths. Lana understood appearances better than anyone. Her measured words for the counselor, her careful laughter at Edward's jokes, were all rehearsed. Their world revolved around pillars of spectacle, gala dinners at the Met, tabloid pageantry, photographs angled to cast her as arm candy, never architect. But as Lana glided through these scenes, she was writing a parallel script. The first night, Edward invited a lover to join them, a Hungarian model with an accent that sang. Lana pretended not to mind. Champagne, laughter, and silks. A weekend that vanished without consequence. Except Lana had placed the first camera herself, small as a thumb drive, hidden beneath the obsidian bar. The lens caught glances the mirror never would. The footage felt like an accident at first. By the third encounter, it was a decision. She taught herself to edit quietly in the guest suite, balancing her laptop between charity emails. She watched her husband transform in these moments, predatory, childlike, desperate to impress. The intimacy became currency, the secret, intoxicating. Uploading the first video required dark nerve. The password-protected forums, filled with anonymous avatars and coded language, were worlds apart from gala society. She chose the username Gilded Eye, posted a teasing thread, and waited. Within hours, crypto offers rolled in. Monaco bankers, Los Angeles producers, even a Dubai heiress, all desperate for vicarious thrills, for a glimpse beneath the gloss. The rush was addictive. The next event, she planned with precision. Which room, which lover, which angle? She learned what the audiences prized. Hesitation, daring, the shimmer of risk beneath luxury. Each new encounter fed her new footage. Each upload fed her bank account and her sense of agency. And yet, no one suspected. Edward prided himself on knowing every angle, but Lana thrived on the blind spots. Her reputation as the perfect wife masked her emerging power, in secrets, in silence, in the control of the gaze. The city sprawled below, indifferent and electric. Lana raised her glass to the skyline, watched her reflection merge with the night, and allowed herself, for once, a genuine, if private, smile. Tomorrow, everything would look the same. But very quietly, the game had begun. Chapter 2. Foreshadow. The Carter penthouse seemed to float above winter's grip, a fortress of warmth sealed against the city's frozen pulse. Outside, snow painted harsh angles along the high-rises, but within, the rhythm of jazz and clink of crystal worked to blur sharp edges. Tonight, Lana orchestrated the evening with a conductor's flair, wine chosen for its story, guests curated for their appetites and discretion. At the piano, Edward performed his best routine, attentive host, attentive husband, his charm a tailored suit never removed. But Lana's focus was elsewhere, drawn to Ivy, tonight's newest guest. Ivy was unlike the quick-burn flings Edward usually preferred. Her entrance was deliberate. Her smile met the room's expectation, but her eyes did not. Flame-red hair piled atop her head, a black cocktail dress with an architectural sharpness. She looked like danger personified, a painting out of place in Edward's usual gallery of safe choices. All night, Lana watched subtle signals pass, Edward's hand grazing Ivy's wrist, Ivy's low laugh, the micro-expressions veiled behind glances. Yet Ivy seemed to study everyone in return, her gaze pressing deeper than politeness allowed. When Edward whispered something and Ivy laughed, her eyes darted not at him, but toward the smoked glass above the kitchen island. After the last guest vanished into a waiting car, the real play began. Lana, feet bare to the cool marble, moved through her routine, erasing glasses, collecting napkins, checking the feeds from her hidden cameras. On her laptop, a split screen glowed: living room, guest suite, hall. As Ivy and Edward disappeared into the guest wing, Lana shifted her attention, holding her breath for the perfect capture. Through the lens, every stolen touch was amplified. But then the unexpected. Before following Edward, Ivy paused and glanced up at the hallway's smoke detector. Her fingertip traced the seam. A slow, knowing smile crossed her lips, one that would haunt Lana later. The camera caught it all. Finished with her evening's surveillance, Lana retreated to her own suite. She replayed the footage again and again. The way Ivy moved, the familiarity in her assessment of the camera's hiding place. There was awareness, calculation. Lana felt her chest tighten. Had she underestimated Ivy? Or had Ivy been playing her own game all along? That night, sleep eluded Lana. The metropolis outside, always indifferent to private deceit, pressed closer through the window's fog. As she watched the digital clock blink, Lana realized for the first time that someone in her house might actually see her. The thrill she once felt was replaced by the uneasy certainty. The next move was no longer hers alone. Chapter 3. Shift. Lana barely tasted her morning espresso, every muscle drawn tight as the city outside braced against freezing rain. She woke before Edward, unusual, her mind replaying the night's footage, freeze-framing Ivy's lingering gaze at the smoke detector. It didn't feel like a coincidence. Ivy was reading the room in ways even Lana could recognize. The penthouse felt airless, the glass panes suddenly more exposing than protective. As Edward prepped for his board meeting, Lana rehearsed indifference, but the knowledge of Ivy's awareness sat beneath her skin, prickling with every text ping and mechanical greeting from the staff. She took the back staircase, never on camera, to her office. First order, audit her network. She checked each feed, frame by frame, looking for tampering, signs of an outside eye. Everything looked untouched, but a gnawing unease interrupted the ritual. Could Ivy have known the camera's placement by chance, or was this a professional curiosity? Unable to settle, Lana dove deeper. She researched Ivy's background, scouring social media, news clippings, even the university alumni databases. Ivy's past was curated, a couple of viral restaurant reviews, scattered interviews about culinary technique. But then, in a half-buried niche blog, Lana found a thread. Ivy D, exposed at Hackathon 2015. The post described how Ivy, then unknown and barely out of college, had publicly embarrassed a tech CEO during a live event, highlighting vulnerabilities in smart home devices. It was a tantalizing detail. Was Ivy a tech-savvy infiltrator, or just someone with a score to settle? Cold adrenaline sharpened Lana's focus. She set an alert on Ivy's email and Instagram handles, then messaged her own trusted digital fixer, a former tabloid PI, for deeper background. That evening, Edward suggested dinner at their favorite private club, his tone light but his eyes a little too attentive. Ivy wouldn't join them that night. She texted, claiming a work emergency. But Lana caught herself searching for double meaning in every message. Later, alone in her room, Lana scrutinized her own digital habits, VPN protocols, device security, even the logs for her Gilded Eye dark web account. She deleted browsing history and cycled strong passwords, but couldn't shake the feeling that Ivy's awareness wasn't an accident at all. Her fixer replied at midnight, "Ivy Danielle Schrader, patent holder in biometric authentication, a history of short-lived relationships with people in surveillance-adjacent industries, and, most notably, a whisper campaign on hacker forums that tagged her as Red Queen, someone who had once weaponized private videos against her own blackmailer." The rules had changed, Lana realized, heart thundering in her chest. She thought she understood the economy of secrets. But now, she wasn't sure whose move was next. For the first time since the agreement began, Lana felt the ground tilt. Power was never static, and her position had become intensely, unexpectedly vulnerable. She lay awake as dawn painted pale lines across the city, planning contingencies. There were only two certainties in this game. Every watcher was watched, and in the world of open secrets, the most dangerous rival is someone who already knows your moves. Tomorrow, she decided, she'd stop simply observing. She'd start playing back. Chapter 4. Pressure Point. Manhattan thawed under a bitter midday sun, but inside the Carter penthouse, Lana's world was shrinking. She kept busy orchestrating meaningless phone calls and rearranging crystal vases, all while replaying her midnight investigation of Ivy's digital past. The adrenaline was now a bladed edge. For the first time since her marriage began, Lana was afraid. A dinner party loomed that evening. Lana selected her wardrobe carefully, something that whispered sophistication and power. Ivy would attend, of course. The invitation had been accepted with a cryptic, "Wouldn't miss it." Despite Lana's best efforts, her heart hammered as she watched the guest list fill out. The knives on the table were for more than just steak. As the night unfurled, the penthouse teemed with laughter, forced ease, and calculated toasts. Ivy arrived late, a flash of red hair, black silk, lips painted the color of blood. She greeted Edward with a kiss on both cheeks then drifted to Lana, pausing just a breath too long. "Lovely earrings," she said, her voice honeyed but clipped. "Vintage." The compliment felt like a challenge. Wine flowed. Jokes about market swings and travel bans circled the room, but Lana barely tasted her fillet. Instead, she watched Ivy's reflection in every glass and tried to decipher the subtext of every smile. After dessert, Lana rose to fetch her phone and check her feeds, habit disguised as duty. Her screen lit up with an anonymous email. No subject, just an attachment. Hands trembling, she opened the file. It was an image of her own bedroom, shot from a vantage point she hadn't installed. The camera, hidden behind a decorative molding, captured Lana reviewing footage on her laptop, nerves raw in her posture. The email's body held a single sentence. "Checkmate." Lana glanced up from her phone, her face composed by force of will. Across the room, Ivy met her gaze over the rim of a crystal goblet. She lifted her glass in a silent toast. Lana's pulse thundered in her ears. Excusing herself, Lana hurried upstairs, checking every familiar camera and all the possible hideouts for new tech. Nothing was where it should or shouldn't be. Her hands tingled. Ivy's message was clear. She wasn't just aware, she was inside the house and inside the game. All at once, the rush of secret power turned to dread. Lana realized the game wasn't private anymore. She leaned against her bedroom door, replaying the anonymous threat, and acknowledged for the first time that the predator may not be the one holding the camera. By morning, the Carter penthouse would still gleam for the world, but for Lana, every reflection now hinted at a different truth. The line between hunter and hunted had vanished. Chapter 5. Secret Revealed. A heavy dusk clung to Manhattan, the sky choked with clouds that reflected bronze and black in the high-rise windows. Lana sat in the cocoon of her study, fingers curled around an untouched glass of wine, her laptop screen casting a cold wash over her face. The city thrummed below, oblivious to the wire-taut tension in the Carter penthouse. She opened her secure browser, ready to post that night's edit from the surveillance archive. But as the clock clicked 11:59, her heart faltered. An unfamiliar rhythm. Her inbox flashed with a new message. Encrypted, unsigned, subject line empty. She hovered, then clicked. The attachment was a video file. With mounting dread, Lana pressed play. The footage flickered into view, her own face, hunched in concentration as she queued up and studied tapes. The angle was new. Someone had recorded her, through her own darkness. A second message arrived before she could track the IP. "Scarlet Lens, let's talk terms, Gilded Eye." Recognition jolted through her. It was Ivy's notorious hacker moniker from those old web forums. Ivy was no longer just a lover or a mark. She was an adversary, and she had leverage. Below Ivy's digital signature were bank codes, threats, and options. Pay. The tapes stay buried. Stop. Cease all sales and disappear. Refuse. The entire cash, every compromise, every transaction, every face goes public. Lana's mind raced. She quickly checked her dark web accounts. Threads she'd started weeks ago under her pseudonym had been hijacked. Buyers now discussing videos she'd never authorized, with details only Ivy could know. One forum user posted, "Looks like Gilded Eye's got competition." Another, "The watcher gets watched." Poetic. Her phone vibrated with a private message. A 30-second clip, this time of her alone, in bed, face washed with worry, the lens drinking in her vulnerability. Ivy's final text was blunt. "If you want to keep playing, play honestly. I decide the rules now." With trembling hands, Lana closed the window. panic and humiliation scraped raw along her nerves. The game had changed. She was not outplayed. She was exposed. For years, secrecy was her shield. Now it was a knife pressed to her own throat. She tried to call Edward, but her voice caught. He was still out, oblivious to the digital storm brewing over their lives. For the first time, Lana felt genuinely trapped. Once, she believed she was choreographing every angle. But tonight, the light caught her too, turning her from puppeteer to unwilling puppet. Across town, Ivy signed off, the balance of power irrevocably rewritten. Lana stared at her reflection in the laptop screen, wondering if she still recognized the woman behind the mask, or if, in her quest for control, she had finally become just another player in someone else's show. Chapter 6. Fallout. Morning crawled in on pale, reluctant light, every inch of the Carter penthouse now loaded with suspicion and the chill of a war just declared. Lana awoke to the backbeat of anxiety, her mind still fraught with images of her own secrets turned against her. The apartment, once a golden fortress, now felt porous and invaded, every reflection a silent witness to her undoing. Edward sensed the tension, nose deep in the Wall Street Journal, but glancing above the rim at his wife. He made a show of checking his phone, frowning at calendar alerts, but his calm was as rehearsed as ever. Lana envied him, the comfort of not knowing, yet she also resented it. Their arrangement, once her hidden haven, was a powder keg with a lit fuse. The news broke subtly at first. A cryptic thread surfaced on an exclusive online forum, allusions to scandal among New York's elite, veiled references to trophy tapes, and an empire built on voyeurism. It was enough to trigger whispers. Lana watched her inbox fill with ambiguous texts from friends, concern hidden behind curiosity, as if intimacy could be traded like gossip. Edward called a meeting before breakfast. The counselor who had once guided their vows now presided over a damage control summit. Lana sat stony-faced as Edward read the posts aloud, each fact extracted from the rumors burrowed under her skin. Ivy's name was never mentioned, but her fingerprints were everywhere. Clever, vengeful, thorough. When Edward asked for an explanation, Lana lied, just a little. She painted herself as a bystander, feigning ignorance of the tapes, muting her own agency. But inside she was unraveling. Ivy hadn't just threatened her security. She threatened the Carter brand itself. When trust shattered in a family as public as theirs, it could mean the end of the illusion. The following days blurred into endless crisis meetings. PR advisors issued strict talking points. Security swept the penthouse, combing for bugs that only Lana truly understood. Through it all, Edward oscillated between icy silence and volcanic accusation. If Lana had hoped for protection, she found only isolation. Meanwhile, Ivy vanished. No digital trace, no sightings at her usual haunts, her social media erased with surgical precision. But the dark web hummed with activity. Tapes, some Lana recognized, others she did not, circulated among anonymous bidders. Ivy was franchising the blackmail operation, and whispers soon surfaced that other trophy wives were implicated. The marketplace had turned viral and savage, a digital plague infecting gilded cages far beyond Manhattan. Lana made desperate attempts to shut down her online alias. She deleted accounts, scrubbed caches, but Ivy anticipated every move. Screenshots of Ivy's cryptic warnings appeared in forums. The blackmail game had grown, no longer content to threaten Lana alone. It aimed now at an entire ecosystem, a network of secrets stretching from penthouses to luxury hammams to distant, sunlit estates. One evening, as the city roared below, Lana found herself staring into her own reflection. Was she a victim, a villain, or simply a survivor, spinning in the maelstrom she'd helped to create? The rules had changed. Control was no longer in the keeping of secrets, but in the willingness to risk exposure. And as the headlines mounted and allies thinned, Lana understood at last. The true cost of power wasn't what you could hide. It was what you couldn't unfurl, even after everything was stripped away. Outside, the city's lights refused to blink, indifferent to scandal, loss, or ambition. Inside, Lana readied herself for whatever storm came next, painfully aware that for the first time she might not be prepared to weather it alone. Chapter 7. Retaliation. Lana waited in the cold glow of her laptop screen, each hour dragging her deeper into the vortex Ivy had created. The Carter name, once an entry pass to the city's most exclusive circles, was now a punchline in private group chats, and a warning whispered among Manhattan's elite. Every ring of her phone sent her pulse skittering. Was it another journalist? Another threat? Or just the echo of her earlier ambitions coming home to roost? The news kept spreading. More wives appeared in the leaked tapes, faces Lana vaguely recognized from champagne brunches and charity galas. Some reached out in desperation, others with rage thinly disguised as camaraderie. A few threatened to expose Lana if she didn't fix this. Each plea tightened the net. Nobody admitted the obvious. They all knew surveillance was part of the game. They just never thought it would become a weapon against themselves. Lana understood she could no longer run or hide. Her options narrowed with every viral rumor. Fight and risk all, or surrender and be devoured by the machinery she helped set in motion. She chose the only route left. Retaliation. Her first move was to resurrect an old contact, Marek, a hacker who'd owed her a favor from a long-ago showdown involving a particularly vengeful socialite and a vanished crypto wallet. Marek's world was strings of code and cascading green text, but he loved nothing more than the thrill of digital war. "How deep do you want to go?" he asked, voice filtered through static. "All the way," Lana replied, swallowing fear. Together they traced Ivy's Bitcoin wallets through a maze of laundering operations stretching from Prague to Seoul. Marek uncovered login attempts from a cluster of servers in the Czech Republic, Ivy's digital safe house. There, Lana glimpsed the raw inventory, thousands of files, careful logs of sales, and encrypted chats dripping with blackmail. Confrontation, Marek warned her, wasn't the best angle. "Plant a seed of doubt in her market, and she'll become the hunted," he coached. Lana spread whispers in the community, rumors that Scarlet Lens, Ivy's alias, worked for a police task force, that recent buyers were suddenly getting contacted by authorities, that a famous tech billionaire wanted his tapes back, at any cost. Within days, the marketplace began to fracture. Posts tagged Ivy as a risk. Buyers went silent, their offers evaporating. Ivy lashed out in the forums, trying to quash suspicions, but the damage was done. The flood of Bitcoin slowed to a trickle. Sellers, once desperate for her favor, turned cautious, even hostile. Oddly, Lana didn't feel victorious. The need to reclaim her power ignited something dark and relentless within her, a compulsion not to win, but to prevent total ruin, no matter the cost to anyone else. Her insomnia returned with a vengeance. Every creak in the penthouse was a specter, every shadow a threat. Days blurred. Lana lost herself in the rhythm of the hunt, tracking code, reading forums, countering Ivy's every calculated move. She barely slept, barely ate, numb to Edward's alternating rages and silences. Her world shrank to screens and passwords, alliances built on mutual distrust. One icy evening, huddled beneath a blanket and layers of anxiety, Lana realized she wasn't fighting for her marriage, her wealth, or her reputation anymore. She was fighting for the simple right to survive on her own terms. She sent her final attack, a package of doctored receipts and misleading logs, to a notorious gossip broker, ensuring Ivy's reputation would teeter as buyers questioned if her tapes had ever been real or just bait for an elaborate takedown. By week's end, Ivy's encrypted aliases were radioactive, her market in chaos. But the phone in Lana's hand buzzed again, this time with a new message. No sender, no subject, only a single line of text. You move, I move. This is far from over. And just like that, Lana understood the war had only shifted, not ended. The ledger of power was open, and for every secret erased, a new one was carved in its place. She closed her eyes, steeled herself, and prepared for the next round, knowing that in this game, the only guarantee was that nobody got out unscathed. Chapter 8, Alliances. Sleep was a memory Lana no longer trusted. She prowled the penthouse at dawn, checking window locks and digital feeds, her mind so saturated with suspicion that every flicker on a screen felt like a threat. Edward, defeated and irritable, rarely emerged from endless calls with lawyers and PR strategists. The air inside was thick with silence, an unspoken truce between partners who now had nothing left but mutually assured destruction. It was during one of these insomnia-fueled mornings that Lana's phone buzzed, a message, anonymous but familiar. The subject line read, "Celine wants to talk." Lana hesitated, recalling the French heiress who'd once dazzled the same parties and for a while shared Edward's attentions. Celine had vanished from their circle months ago after a messy, very public scandal. Lana suspected Ivy's tapes played a role. Nerves tingling, Lana agreed to meet. They chose a discreet hotel lounge, lit by dusk and the low murmur of old jazz. Celine arrived guarded and chic, draped in black, eyes rimmed with exhaustion. The aura of scandal hung between them. Celine didn't waste words. "Ivy blackmailed me. Not just with the tapes, with things no one else could know." Her voice was brittle but deliberate. "She's franchised it, Lana. There are others like her. Some wives are paying to escape exposure. Others are paying for silence." Lana's shock melted into grim understanding. Together, they mapped a loose web. Wealthy spouses quietly ruining each other's reputations, all while Ivy profited as middlewoman, confidant, tormentor. Celine's revelation was decisive. She still had digital receipts of Ivy's extortion and threads leading to other exposed targets. They realized their only hope lay in pooling resources, not in isolation. Reluctantly, Lana confessed her failed campaign of digital sabotage. Celine, bitter but pragmatic, revealed a new plan, a campaign to expose not just Ivy, but the entire shadow market. "You leak Ivy's real name. I release buyer lists. Let the market eat itself." Lana hesitated. The fallout would be biblical. Names, marriages, fortunes, all scorched in a single leak. "We'll be as guilty as her," Lana whispered. "All of us." But Celine only shrugged. "In this world, power is survival. Choose your alliance, Lana." The rest of the night was tactics, VPNs, burner phones, screenshots. Each plotted how to maximize chaos while minimizing collateral damage. Trust was impossible, but aligned interests forged an uneasy partnership. Back at the penthouse, Lana watched the city lights flicker far below, contemplating the line she was about to cross. She knew Celine had her own agenda, vengeance as much as survival. There was no tidy end, only escalation. With every move, the circle of conspiracy widened. The women who had once competed for Edward's attention now conspired to bring down a predator who had exploited them all. The first message, coded, cryptic, hit the right dark web boards that night. As dawn approached, Lana finally felt something shift. The game was no longer only about defense. It was about retaliation, exposure, and the dangerous power of unlikely alliances. In a world built on secrets, sometimes your only weapon is the truth you're most afraid to share. Chapter 9. Collapse Begins. The city outside roared on as if nothing inside the Carter penthouse had shifted, but Lana felt the walls draw tighter with every sunrise. The alliance with Celine set off shockwaves, subtle at first. A few nervous investors in Edward's businesses quietly pulling out, whispers among the upper crust, eyes lingering longer, and conversations dropping away when Lana entered a room. It wasn't just rumors now, it was evidence. Celine's data leaks appeared on encrypted forums, coded names and veiled screenshots that, when paired with Ivy's infamous reputation, painted a damning picture for those smart enough to piece things together. Lana watched as once-viewed friends now avoided her gaze at galas and charity lunches. The invitations slowed, replaced by terse emails or none at all. She was no longer a coveted guest, but a potential threat, someone who might know too much or say too little. The tapes hadn't merely exposed others, they'd isolated Lana on all sides. Edward's businesses started to crack. Rumors about compromising content trickled out to company boards. Major investors began asking questions he couldn't easily answer. One ill-timed news leak, flagging unnamed executives at risk of blackmail, torpedoed a merger Edward had spent years orchestrating. He turned cold, blaming Lana in clipped undertones, yet still unwilling to confront the full extent of her involvement. Lana sought refuge in work, controlling what little she could. Emails, calls to lawyers, orchestrating new digital firewalls, shifting financial assets into trust accounts she controlled alone. But the sense of safety grew thinner by the day. The penthouse, always a fortress of privilege, now felt more like a museum. Cold, silent, and haunted by echoes of laughter and love that never quite belonged to her. Online, the storm escalated. Ivy responded with a new wave of videos, some obviously doctored, others disarmingly real. The forums fed on the chaos, speculating whether the leaks were law enforcement traps, blackmail stings, or just the last gasps of an empire falling apart. Lana's attempts to post clarifications or denials were instantly drowned in a flood of counterclaims and jeering anonymity. At night, Lana replayed scenes from a fading life. The gala where Edward had first introduced her as the woman who saved me time and trouble. The silent car rides after private dinners. The first time she had hidden a camera and discovered how intoxicating power felt. But looking back did nothing to solve her immediate crisis. The more she calculated, the clearer it became. Every move now threatened not only her reputation, but her very survival. Celine, for all her bravado, started to pull back, quietly erasing their text chain and disappearing from Lana's contacts once she had achieved her own aims. In the end, their alliance was transactional, a brief torch in the dark, snuffed out when the scrutiny became too hot. One final blow landed without warning, a collection of anonymous envelopes sent to select journalists, each containing images, Bitcoin transactions, and a simple message: what is truth worth? By morning, Lana was headline material. Secrets, sex, and surveillance, the trophy wife scandal. The Carter name was now synonymous with downfall and disgrace. For Lana, the collapse was personal, a stripping away of status, identity, and the thin illusion of control. The city moved on, its rhythms undisturbed by one woman's fall from the heights. But Lana knew the old life was lost, the future now a storm of her own making. Outside her window, Manhattan glittered, unforgiving, uncaring, but impossibly alive. And in the ruins of her old world, Lana prepared for what the next day, and the next battle, would demand. Chapter 10. Turning Point. Lana awoke to the relentless hum of the city, a backdrop that now felt like a taunt. The media firestorm from the anonymous leaks refused to die down, splintering her days into a string of urgent calls, legal consultations, and impossible choices. Headlines looped the saga. Her face beside Edward's, pixelated images from old tapes, experts debating the future of privacy. Even in retreat, the glare was unyielding. Her phone vibrated with another encrypted message, this one heartbreakingly simple. Rooftop, 12:30. The sender was labeled Scarlet Lens. Lana felt anger spark low and hot. It ended tonight, she told herself. No more intermediaries, no more moves in the dark. The rooftop was black glass and icy air. Ivy waited, her red hair swept back, coat drawn tight and posture unafraid. Neither woman spoke at first. The wind filled the silence, the city's glow washing them both in neon. Finally, Ivy broke it. You thought you could control the narrative, but every secret here is shared. Every woman I dragged into this, we're all on the auction block. Her tone was neither malicious nor apologetic. Just tired. Lana snapped back. You destroyed people. You started it. Ivy's eyes flashed. Or did you only care when it turned on you? The confrontation spiraled, quiet at first, then raw with pain. Ivy confessed her first blackmail wasn't for money, but to stop her own abuser. Secrets are weapons, Lana. You just happened to build an armory. The truth landed hard. Beneath the anger, Lana felt the gravitational pull of understanding. For the first time, their rivalry revealed itself as kinship. Different languages of survival, spoken in the same house of mirrors. Ivy pulled an SD card from her pocket and offered it. Delete them. All of it. I'll do the same. But we do this together, on your terms. It was a truce, for now. On impulse, Lana suggested something reckless. Let's control the story. One final tape, me and you, together. A confession. No edits, we tell it all. They recorded on Lana's phone, raw, unfiltered, voices sometimes trembling, sometimes defiant. They spoke of love as currency, violence done with secrets rather than fists, and the sickness of having power with nobody to trust. When it ended, Ivy erased her copies. Lana did too. The market faded. For a heartbeat, dignity hung between them like fragile glass. Lana was changed. This wasn't redemption, nor total victory. But for the first time since the agreement, the narrative belonged, however briefly, to those who had lived and lost the most. Below, the city surged relentless, but the game above had shifted. Lana descended from the rooftop not free, but resolutely, prepared to face whatever storm her confession now invited. In the world of secret wars, control was an illusion. But choosing honesty, if only for a moment, felt defiantly real. Chapter 11. Doubt. The city felt relentless as ever. But inside the Carter penthouse, Lana drifted in a daze of aftermath. Every hour brought a new notification, an article, a legal alert, a message from an ex-friend. She moved through the gilded rooms as a ghost, the battles of recent weeks echoing off marble and chrome. Now that the tapes were gone, and the rivalry publicly confessed, she had no clear enemy, just the silence of exposed secrets. Sleep eluded her. She cycled through news sites and private forums, half expecting Ivy, or some new adversary, to reappear with a fresh threat. Instead, life spun past her screens. New scandals, new faces. The world seemed already eager to bury the ruins of the Carter scandal beneath the next digital outrage. Edward barely spoke now. Their conversations clipped, transactional, heavy with unspoken blame. Lana avoided his gaze, knowing both of them had failed to protect what little trust remained. In quiet moments, doubt gnawed at her resolve. Had she ever loved Edward, or was it always about leverage and survival? Did Ivy's campaign spring from justice or vengeance? Was Lana truthful in the rooftop confession? Or did she only admit to what the world already knew? Stripped of secrets and status, she found herself reckoning with emptiness. She scrolled through old photos, smiling galas, lavish nights, the afternoon her mother taught her how to check reflection angles in silverware at upscale hotels. All lessons in survival now seemed hollow. Tentatively, Lana attempted therapy, hoping to find a narrative she could live with. But the sessions reopened wounds. Each memory examined turned into more doubt about her motives, her ambition, the roles she'd played for love, power, safety. And still, the world outside moved on, news cycles spinning and forgetting. Ivy, too, was gone, her signal dead, her trail wiped clean from hacker circles and social news. At times, Lana wondered if any of them were real, or if their power struggle belonged solely to the unsparing city that bred and destroyed its icons. In the end, Lana was left with herself, her story out in the world, reputation split between fascination and infamy. She drifted from room to empty room, unsure if truth had redeemed her or just rendered her invisible. For the first time, Lana understood how easily the narrative slips from your hands, how one moment you are the author, the next only a character in someone else's unfinished story. Chapter 12. Flashback. Long before penthouses, dark web games, or viral scandals, Lana stood beneath the dripping magnolia trees of a place she barely remembered as home. She was 9, hiding behind her mother's garden bench, listening to voices hover between laughter and venom. Her mother, silk-draped, spine straight as a ruler, practiced a daily choreography of survival. "Always control the angle of the mirror, not the gaze in it," she whispered to Lana, dabbing tears with a linen napkin as soon as the garden gate creaked with her father's return. Years later, the lesson had sharpened to an instinct. As a teenager, Lana sat at the back of debate club meetings, her beauty both disguise and test. She learned that secrets were a kind of currency, first traded in schoolyard whispers, then in the crush of high society lunches. Her mother's bitter wisdom grew roots. Let others believe they saw everything, while you held the truth just out of sight. College, too, was survival. Lana charmed professors, partners, and rivals, blending sincerity and performance. Her first taste of betrayal, a roommate's stolen heirloom, a lover's infidelity, found her unshaken. She'd already braced for it in the world she'd left behind. On a summer internship trip to Spain, Lana watched the ways power flexed in private clubs. She remembered the day she met Edward at a lakeside gala in Como, how his confidence drew the room's attention, but his eyes sought the one woman who didn't fawn. Their first conversation was a game of veiled compliments, and when he sent flowers the next morning, Lana recognized the opening gambit. The flashback spiraled faster as Lana sat in the window alcove of the penthouse, knees hugged to her chest. She viewed her ascent, the dinners, the deals, the coolly negotiated marriage contract, with new clarity. None of it had been simple seduction or naked calculation. Every decision was a response to lessons written by women who'd survived worse. Her mother's silent strength, her friend's quiet sabotage, the socialites who vanished after a single misstep. The memory that haunted most was neither glamorous nor traumatic, but simple. Her mother standing at the mirror, prepping for another battle, disguised as a night out. Meeting Lana's eyes in the glass. "You'll be tempted to show all your cards one day," she'd said softly. "Resist it. Even if you love someone, keep a piece of yourself you never surrender." Slowly, Lana understood the trap she'd built. The cameras, the tapes, the manipulation, they were all protection, writ large, a mosaic of fear masquerading as control. By dawn, as the city brightened below, Lana let herself grieve for what she'd lost. Innocence, belief in unconditional love, the hope that secrets could ever be a barrier to pain. The inheritance passed down was not wealth or privilege, but the knowledge that power, used or withheld, was always double-edged. For the first time in months, Lana cried, silently, without witnesses, then washed her face and faced the new day, determined to choose her next moves without illusions about the cost. The past had shaped her, but the future was a script still hers to write. Chapter 13, Spiral. Lana's world shrank as the weeks stumbled forward. The Carter penthouse, once alive with the pulse of power and promise, was now an exquisite prison echoing with memories and judgment. Manhattan's ceaseless buzz drifted through the frost-etched glass, but inside, silence was total. She haunted her own domain. At night, Lana wandered from room to room, unable to settle. The marble halls blurred at the edges, each familiar surface suddenly alien. The glass elevator, the infinity pool, the silent sweep of city lights. These luxuries seemed to mock her as she drifted outside herself, suspended between regret and resignation. Sleep became unattainable. Lana lay in bed, surrounded by the humming glow of screens, eyes wide and raw. She compulsively watched old surveillance tapes, dissecting every recorded moment for clues of authenticity. Did Edward ever glance at her with real affection? Was Ivy's laugh ever uncalculated? She scrutinized micro-expressions, searching for evidence of love or malice. But all she saw now was performance. Hers, theirs, everyone's. In therapy, Lana's words tangled. "I wanted protection. Maybe I wanted revenge." The therapist offered gentle platitudes, but Lana recoiled. Even now, she wasn't ready to surrender control, to be truly seen. Each question dredged up more self-doubt. Had she become the very villain she promised herself never to be? Did power corrupt or merely reveal? The media storm, while dying down, still stole her peace. Random callers harassed her. Paparazzi lurked at the valet entrance. Social invitations, once a respite, vanished. A few acquaintances sent perfunctory, "thinking of you" texts. But most now ghosted her. She'd become bad luck, a warning whispered at charity luncheons. Edward spent his days in private offices, avoiding her gaze. Their nights were silent, two strangers keeping a fragile distance. Sometimes Lana heard him on late calls, voice sharpened in anger or desperation, old bravado dissipating. She retreated from the world, deleting social apps, locking phones away, only to be dragged back by the gnawing urge for news, rumor, any indication she still mattered. She even attempted meditation, but silence felt threatening. One rain-lashed evening, Lana stood at the mirrored window, her reflection paler and more hollowed than she recognized. Each tear she refused became another layer of armor, and another stone in her self-imposed tomb. There was no dramatic collapse, just the slow erosion of certainty. Her hunger for control withered into exhaustion. She allowed herself to feel what she had so long repelled: sorrow, shame, the ache of being truly alone. Into that vacuum, a single resolve surfaced. If she was to endure, it would be by finding meaning in the ruins. If not for forgiveness, then at least for understanding. The spiral didn't end that night, nor the one after. But as dawn broke, thin and grey, Lana realized her story wasn't over. Just changed. And with a final breath, she resolved to step out of the shadows she'd both cherished and feared, determined to reclaim her part in the narrative, whatever the next cruel twist would bring. Chapter 14. Exposure. The spring wind rattled the penthouse's windows, sharpening Lana's sense that everything outside moved on without her. Her exile felt complete. No calls, no interviews, only the occasional flicker of unwanted media attention. But on this particular afternoon, her phone lit up with a message that made her hands tremble. An email from a low-ranked tabloid journalist, offering a chance at truth rather than scandal. The message was blunt. "We have the tapes, contracts, leaked chats. I want your side." Lana hesitated. Instinct clamored for silence. But she knew the narrative would unfold with or without her. For the first time, she reached out, setting conditions. No payment, no edits. My story. The interview took place in a nondescript coffee shop in Tribeca. No makeup, no camera crew, just Lana and a recorder on the chipped table between them. She spoke for hours about power, exploitation, privacy, and the compulsion to control the story before it controlled her. She confessed her part, never quite naming names, but painting the outlines clear enough for attentive readers to fill in. The journalist asked, "Do you regret it?" Lana answered honestly, "I regret the harm, but not the lesson. People buy secrets because they're desperate to feel power over someone else. We're all voyeurs now." When the piece ran, "The trophy wife who exposed her own game," the response was electric. Some branded Lana a villain, others an accidental whistleblower. The expose tore through social media, igniting debates about surveillance, privilege, and the blurred lines between victim and perpetrator. Talk shows dissected her every word. Legal analysts forecasted a new wave of privacy reform. Lana watched the world debate her from the shadows of her living room. The market for trophy wife tapes shriveled nearly overnight. Buyers worried about becoming the next headline. Edward's boardroom troubles multiplied, old allies vanishing, his carefully tended image wrecked by association. But the lasting impact came from unexpected places. Messages flooded Lana's inbox, women and a few men, admitting to their own complicity, their own secret recordings, their own regrets. Advocacy groups asked to speak with her. Documentary producers inquired about her story, framed as a cautionary tale more than a scandal. For the first time, Lana sensed the possibility of meaning in her unraveling. She realized she could help others step out from behind their own shields of secrecy and shame. Her pain, the public branding, the losses, might yet be transmuted into something like resilience. That night, as Manhattan's lights pulsed with other people's stories, Lana walked alone onto the balcony. It wasn't redemption, but it was exposure. And sometimes, when you stop running from the truth, you find it doesn't destroy you. It simply reveals who you've always been. Chapter 15. Revenge. Spring thundered through New York, bringing with it an air of rebirth Lana hadn't felt in months. The media storm raged on, but something inside her clicked from fear to resolve. She was no longer content to be the headline's cautionary tale or the city's favorite scandal. If the world already believed her villain, then it was time her narrative served a purpose beyond her own survival. Messages poured in, some vicious, some apologetic, all hungry for association. Among them emerged a thread Lana hadn't expected, a grassroots swell of support from women who had lived in the shadow of powerful men, who had concealed their own desperate gambits for control. Anonymous online coalitions began outing buyers on secret forums, sharing lists of dark web hosts, and exposing moderators who had profited from silence. The digital tide was turning. Inspired, Lana reached out to a tech journalist known for wrecking lives with the truth, proposing a series of exposés on the buyers and enablers behind the market. She shared what she had: Bitcoin receipts, screenshots, archives of market threads, all carefully curated to implicate the architects, not just the pawns. The resulting stories stripped away the anonymity of dozens who had paid for the right to watch and judge in secret. Ivy, too, was not spared. Hacktivist groups, fueled by the fire Lana had set, discovered Ivy's digital fingerprints and slowly unraveled her network. Her infamous Scarlet Lens handle was linked in meticulously sourced spreadsheets to ransomware schemes, fake charities, and other high-profile blackmail rings. In weeks, Ivy's empire crashed, her accounts frozen, her reputation as a dark web queen reduced to a cautionary meme on every security blog. Edward watched the collapse unfold from a distance. He refused to speak to Lana, withdrawing into corporate legal wars that grew more desperate with every passing day. His assets bled away through settlements, public apologies, and the hurried selling of non-essential properties. Legal authorities, pressed by public outrage and mounting evidence, rushed to draft new digital privacy regulations. Senate hearings filled news cycles with emotional testimony. Victims and perpetrators alike made public apologies, some genuine, some strategic. Lana felt no immediate relief, only a subtle realignment inside herself. She had wanted control. Now, for better or worse, she had influence. Her name and her actions commanded attention. She prudently declined book deals and lucrative speaking fees, choosing instead to meet in private with survivors, advocates, and even a few of her old enemies, forging connection out of ashes. Threats still lingered: angry buyers, ruined socialites, and a handful of online stalkers determined to bring Lana down once and for all. But she found unlikely comfort in the messages from those she'd helped, in the knowledge that now, at last, the market for pain bore the names and faces it once hid. As summer crept toward Manhattan, Lana stepped into the city alone, just another woman among millions, scarred, infamous, but entirely herself. Her actions had not healed every wound, but they'd signaled an end to secrecy, to silent complicity, to a world where power was traded in darkness. What would come next, she did not know. But for the first time in years, she moved through the city, not with fear, but with purpose. Her story, whatever the consequences, was finally her own. Chapter 16, The Setup. The world outside Lana's window was changed, restless and raw, saliva-slick sidewalks reflecting the buzz of a city regrown feral after scandal. The Carter name became both legend and warning, a tale played out and picked through by every talking head. Lana saw her reflection in shop fronts and screens, but always as a silhouette, never quite herself, never quite forgotten. With Edward gone in the swirl of lawsuits and asset reallocations, the penthouse finally emptied. Lana packed without sentiment, discarded evening gowns, shoeboxes of old gala invitations, pieces of herself curated for a life that never truly belonged. What she kept fit in a single suitcase, a faded photo of her mother, a compact mirror, a gold necklace, and a battered notebook filled with outlines. She retreated across the river to a small apartment, whose only luxury was anonymity. Windows there framed not the skyline's bravado, but the honest rust of forgotten warehouses, places where stories grew, unguarded by glass or ambition. In solitude, Lana considered erasing her digital presence forever. But anger and purpose, twin embers, refused to die. Instead, she carved a new project, a podcast titled Confessions in Glass Houses, recorded in a voice stripped of its old performance. She spoke the way she wished anyone had spoken to her, candid, skeptical, never asking for forgiveness, yet daring listeners not to recognize themselves. Each episode drilled beyond surface scandal, topics of power, digital blackmail, manipulation, and survival in transactions of the heart. She interviewed other survivors, anonymized by voice distortion, and even a retired privacy lawyer who once helped her hide secrets she now revealed. The show gained traction quietly. Comments flooded in, women and men admitting their own dark bargains and unspoken traumas, the thrills and punishment of living where truth is currency. The setup, her opening theme, became shorthand for the fragile line between protection and exploitation. Lana watched her modest follower count grow, to thousands, then tens of thousands. Sponsors circled, but she refused their money. The price of loyalty had cost her enough. The press, hunting for a comeback angle, speculated wildly about her new purpose. Lana neither confirmed nor denied, refusing interviews, letting only her voice, and the voices of those she helped, be the testament. Through this digital catharsis, Lana discovered something unthinkable. The possibility of influence without secrecy and power without threat. For every night haunted by regret, there were messages of thanks, sometimes trembling with hope. Survivors who found comfort, truth wielded not as a cudgel, but as a torch. Her isolation was real, her circle of trust minuscule. Yet, for the first time since the start of her marriage, she didn't feel at the mercy of anyone's story but her own. She ended each episode the same way. Remember, the setup isn't just a trap. Sometimes it's the only way to escape. For Lana, legacy was no longer about surviving scandal. It was about rewriting the blueprints others forced upon her, and through honesty, handing the pen to someone else. Chapter 17, The Betrayal. Summer crept into the city, sticky and golden, transforming rooftops and alleyways into stages for new beginnings and old grudges. Lana's podcast, Confessions in Glass Houses, was growing, slowly, then all at once. She answered listener emails, coordinated interviews, and poured her story into each episode, forging connection from the ruins of her former life. But even in this newfound purpose, she couldn't outrun the shadows of the Carter legacy. One morning, as rain lashed her window, Lana found an envelope slipped beneath her apartment door. No return address. Inside, a single page, a cease and desist order, stamped with Edward Carter's lawyer's insignia. The message was explicit. She was to stop all podcast activity, withdraw any mention of their past, and destroy all related notes and backups. Any failure meant litigation, public exposure, and the threat of personal ruin. It didn't take Lana long to trace the betrayal. An old friend from her socialite days, familiar with the penthouse's darkest corridors, had leaked Lana's new address and online pseudonym to Edward. In return, she'd been promised a sizable payout and re-entry into high society. Betrayal wasn't new, but it stung, sharp as ever. Lana's chest tightened with that old cocktail of fear, fury, and determination. She reviewed the legal threats line by line, deflated by the realization her voice, so hard won, was once again at risk of being silenced. For a moment, she considered retreat. Erase everything. Disappear. Let the past smother the future. But the fire inside her, banked but not extinguished, roared back. She reached out to a media-savvy attorney, young, queer, and fiercely idealistic, who took the story as a personal cause. "They want your silence because your story matters," the lawyer said, pulling legal precedent and viral support into Lana's corner. On air, Lana tightened her focus, not naming names, but not flinching from her truth either. She explained the new threat, inviting listeners into her struggle. Support flooded in. Social media campaigns, pro bono offers, thousands of signatures on a petition defending survivor voices. Edward's team doubled down. Another injunction, a public smear, threats whispered to potential employers and backers. But this time, Lana didn't fight alone. She rallied support through every avenue. Women's advocacy groups, podcast fans, journalists eager to spotlight free speech battles for a new digital age. Late one night, Lana stared out at the flickering lights beyond her window. The world outside hummed with chaos and possibility. She realized that every story of survival walked hand in hand with the risk of betrayal, but also with the promise that, if you endured, solidarity could grow out of fracture. Lana's response was clear. She pressed record and, in a measured, unshakable voice, told her followers, "They said my silence was the price of civility, but silence is what kept us all complicit. My narrative won't be bought, and what's left to lose is less important than what's finally being found." The storm would rage on, but Lana had made her choice. The betrayal was real, but so was her resolve to speak, a resolve more powerful than any threat to her legacy. Chapter 18. The Confrontation. The legal battle splashed across headlines. Trophy wife vs. billionaire. Who controls the story? Lana's inbox burst with interview requests, advocacy outreach, and digital solidarity, while her lawyer sharpened every brief with precedent and purpose. Edward, ever the strategist, called in his army of attorneys, determined to seal what remained of the Carter family's battered legacy. The case itself was spectacle, a live-streamed drama watched by millions. Pundits dissected every filing, every facial expression entering the courthouse. Protesters and supporters camped outside, their banners reading, "Free her voice" and "Privacy for all." Lana dressed in navy linen, understated, impenetrable, refusing pity or flamboyance. Inside the courtroom, the atmosphere bloomed with tension. Edward's lawyers opened with controlled venom. "Our client's privacy irreparably harmed, proprietary secrets, contracts violated." The judge, a meticulous woman in horn-rimmed glasses, allowed them their spectacle. Then it was Lana's turn. She rose. Her voice, newly trained for the microphone, carried clear. "Everyone benefits from silence, until it's their pain that's mistaken for noise. I lived by their rules. I paid the price. But the moment I chose truth over compliance, the world finally saw what secrets had cost. Me and countless others." She paused, letting the syllables rest. "We were promised the freedom to speak. Now I claim it, not just for myself, but for every survivor who's been threatened into silence." Her lawyer emphasized the podcast's focus, never naming, never scapegoating, but seeking to teach, caution, and warn. Lana's own tapes, now held under confidential seal, were offered as evidence, not of malice, but of self-defense. Edward was called to testify. His practiced composure cracked, just a little, blaming media hunger, betraying the culture of secrets both had maintained. The judge listened, asked tough questions, charted boundaries between narrative and exploitation. After weeks of argument, cross-examination, and public pressure, the ruling was handed down. Lana could speak. Her story, her perspective, her pain, so long as confidential tapes stayed confidential and she did not profit directly from the crimes revealed. The podcast, now a beacon for listeners, was protected as a platform for education, not for personal vendetta. Outside the courthouse, supporters cheered. News crawls dubbed it the verdict for a new age. Privacy activism surged. For a moment, Lana stood on the courthouse steps, her life's wreckage behind her, and realized she'd turned the script one final time, no longer a footnote, but a headline shifting the cultural wind. Back in her apartment, Lana pressed record for a new episode, her voice measured, steel-laced, finally her own to wield. In this arena, power was the illusion. Truth, the real risk, the real weapon, the real legacy. Her story was still unfinished, but for now, the battle was hers. Chapter 19, The Collapse. The Summer City beat with relentless indifference as the Carter scandal's final convulsions echoed through headlines and boardrooms alike. Edward, once the invincible billionaire, found his empire cracked and crumbling, asset lists shrinking, old allies dissolving into legal smoke. Every crisis call, every desperate maneuver, failed to patch the rent fabric of privilege. The Carter name, once gold-leafed, became an albatross in every whisper along Wall Street and Madison Avenue. Lana watched the collapse, not with satisfaction, but with a strange, quiet clarity. The high-rise penthouse was gone. Everything Edward clung to, private jet shares, hedge fund seats, soiree invitations, vanished in a trembling, inexorable tide. Lawyers orchestrated settlements late into the night. Old scandals surfaced. New skeletons tumbled out with every discovery request. Public opinion, always hungry, devoured the spectacle. Hashtags trended, some celebrating Lana's courage, others eviscerating her for complicity. Tabloids built daily soap operas out of each ruined mansion, every slashed deal, every lawsuit filed under dimmed chandeliers. Edward, too proud to beg, weathered the humiliation in silence. Lana's own life was very different now, both smaller and curiously expansive. She traded luxury for freedom, notoriety for impact. Her podcast thrived with an audience less interested in scandal than in raw admissions about power, regret, and recovery. She answered emails from survivors and skeptics alike, sometimes on the train, sometimes on the fire escape of her new walk-up apartment. Her circle dwindled to a handful of genuine friends, and the anonymous comfort of listeners who saw themselves mirrored in her mistakes. She resisted the lure of easy redemption. Every new request, for interviews, for exposés, for book deals, she weighed with a wary heart, no longer eager to barter privacy for applause. There were hard days still, threats from angry onlookers, moments of insidious doubt, the awareness that her reputation would never entirely shed its tarnish. But there was also pride, hard-won, battle-scarred. Lana mentored other women in crisis, sometimes quietly, sometimes publicly, always with a candor forged by her own ordeal. The world no longer revolved around her, and for the first time, Lana was grateful. She had built the illusion of control and watched it collapse. In rubble, she discovered a new beginning, founded not on secrets, but on a tentative, stubborn hope. As a late summer thunderstorm rolled over the city, Lana pressed record on a new episode and spoke into the darkness. Some legacies are built on ruin, not triumph. And sometimes, the freedom to tell your story is the only empire left standing. The rain lashed the windows as she finished, her words not a coda, but an invitation. The collapse was real, but for Lana Carter, so was the promise of rising. Different, wiser, and finally, her own. Chapter 20, Legacy. Autumn swept through the city, shrouding Manhattan in a smoky palette of golds and fading blues. The Carter saga had become a parable for boardrooms, podcasts, and dinner parties, an artifact of an era obsessed with surveillance, spectacle, and the cost of impossible ambition. Yet, beyond the cautionary tales and teachable moments, Lana Carter quietly redefined what remained, her legacy. In her modest apartment, Lana lived with an economy of intention. Gone were the trappings of former luxury. No more tailored gowns, gilded invitations, or guarded elevator rides. She found peace in small certainties, the comfort of waking up without fear, the unhurried ritual of coffee at her window, the steady heartbeat of her own freedom. The podcast continued, morphing from memoir to collective platform. Lana hosted survivors of all kinds, women burned by love and leverage, men destroyed by secrets, teenagers fighting for digital autonomy. Her voice, once a tool for manipulation, took on new shape as a beacon for those seeking to reclaim their narratives. Each story added a stone to a foundation more enduring than any penthouse. Social change rippled outward. Privacy advocates referenced Lana's ordeal at tech conferences. Lawmakers cited her testimony when drafting new regulations. Couples, tentatively, began rewriting the rules of their own marriages and contracts, more transparent, more mutually accountable, more aware of the lines between trust and surveillance. Lawyers updated prenups, adding clauses about digital boundaries. Therapists retooled their marriage counseling scripts. Lana herself became a mentor, taking private meetings in sunlit coffee shops with women on the brink, some starry-eyed and hopeful, others battered by exposure. She taught them to name their fears, to demand agency, and above all, to find the line they would never again allow anyone to cross. Relationship with Edward faded to legalities and reluctant respect. He, diminished, but rebuilding at the city's periphery, never sought reconciliation. Their paths diverged quietly, two survivors of a war fought in rooms the world could never truly understand. On the anniversary of her first podcast episode, Lana recorded a message alone. No guests, no preamble. We can't always choose the roles we inherit. Sometimes the world scripts us as villain, victim, icon. But in the end, legacy belongs to the one who dares to rewrite the script when all the lights have dimmed. If you're listening, this is your permission, your warning, your invitation to choose differently, to be both author and witness, no matter who's watching. As the city below flickered into twilight, Lana placed her compact mirror on the windowsill, a quiet homage to the woman she used to be and the truth she now carried. Her story, etched into digital shadows and private corridors, had become more than a chronicle of scandal. It was a blueprint, a scarred, resilient legacy for anyone ready to claim their own voice at the end of empire. The trophy wife agreement had ended, but its reverberations pulsed onward, in every story told in search of both clarity and grace.